I got somebody I need you to meet. This is Bill. He is a life-size paper doll, okay? And maybe you remember him, at least his cousin George, that was here a few years ago when we did our Equip to a Commit series. Remember we had the paper doll and we ended up dressing him up as a soldier? Well, here we are. Bill has joined us, and well, Bill is going to help us for the remainder of our tailor-made sermon series as we begin to study the uniforms worn by the priest and the high priest in the Old Testament. Oh, that sounds kind of boring. Absolutely not. It's an awesome study to take a look at. And before you get too upset at me about using that term uniform, you have to understand what a uniform is. And all you need is a dictionary. It's not hard. Anybody can do this. Defined, it is the distinct clothing worn by members of the same organization or body or by children attending certain schools. So we do not have a church uniform. I am so glad, because I cannot imagine where we would come to a compromise on what a uniform should look like at a church. But we do not have a uniform, but when I think of uniform, you know, it's the first thing that pops into my mind, right? A military experience. Now, I've never been in the military. They wouldn't take me. I have too many issues with my vision, so they would turn me away. That is, unless they need somebody to peck on a keyboard, then maybe they would hire me. But I'm not military material. But when I was in Charlottesville, I had a friend named Jerry. And Jerry worked at UVA, that's University of Virginia, but he was also military. Now, no, he didn't walk around the campus with his rifle trying to keep all the college students in line, although that might not have been such a bad idea. But he didn't do that. He worked with their ROTC division. And, of course, being friends meant that we went out to lunch. And I'll never forget the first time I went out to lunch, and he showed up, and I'm going to call it what he called it. He showed up in his battle dress uniform. Now, to me, they were camouflage and what I would normally heard called fatigues, but I found out very quickly that's an Army term. The Air Force doesn't use that term, fatigue. I guess you don't get tired when you're in the Air Force. They can't call them fatigued. But it is a battle dress uniform, and you have to remember at this point, the only time I'd ever seen Jerry was at church, and for him, that meant suit and tie. Not for me. For him, that meant suit and tie. Or I saw him at his house. And when I saw him at his house, well, it was shorts and a t-shirt. So when he showed up for lunch that day, it was quite a surprise to me. I never envisioned this man. By the way, he's 6'6", so he kind of stands out in the crowd. But I never envisioned him walking around town in what looked like a military uniform. And the amazing thing is, we were having our lunch, I noticed that wearing the uniform, he kind of sat up straighter. Okay, and I noticed that when we left the restaurant, Jerry had what they used to call a 10 till 2 walk. You know what that is? It's where your feet kind of go to side. It was almost like a waddle when he walked, which is really kind of funny for a 6'6" man. But when he had this uniform on, his stride was in pace. And when he had this uniform on, the uniform seemed to change the man. Tell you what, we'll get back to that. Did you know there are actually different kind of uniforms that go with even the Air Force? What I saw Jerry wearing that day was considered his everyday uniform. He also had dress uniforms that he wore at various times. He also had another flavor of the uniform that was kind of in between. And the important thing to remember is when you get to the Old Testament priest, we usually think of the image that we've got on the screen right now, a very ornate uniform that they wear that has all of these different colors and these little stones and all of these things that are going on, something that is very distinctive. But you need to remember, that's the dress uniform. Today, we want to talk about what I am going to call the everyday uniform. So grab yourself a Bible, and kids, you can do this too if you want to follow along. We're going to be in Exodus chapter 28, verses 39 through 43, and we're going to talk about the everyday uniform of the priesthood. And so this is how it reads. It reads, "Weave the tunic of fine linen, Make a turban of fine linen. The sash is to be a work of embroiderer. Make tunics, sashes, and caps for Aaron's sons to give them dignity and honor. After you put these clothes on your brother Aaron and his sons, anoint and ordain them, consecrate them so they may serve me as priests. Make undergarments as covering for the body, reaching from the waist to the thigh. Aaron and his sons must wear them whenever they enter the tent meeting or approach the altar to minister in the holy place, so that they will not incur guilt and die. This is a lasting ordinance for Aaron and his descendants. So when we begin to talk about this uniform, the first thing that I need you to see is that the garments, well, they were white. And white means something in the Old Testament because white was the symbol of purity. We see this in Isaiah chapter 1, verse 18. Come now and let us settle the matter, says the Lord. Though your sins are like scarlet, they shall be white as snow. Though they are red as crimson, they shall be like wool. Now, if I was going to pick a material or a color for somebody that was going to work as a priest, remember, these guys are going to deal with a lot of blood. And white wouldn't be my choice. I mean, why? Well, because white stains so very easy. I probably would have picked red, okay? Because that means when it's stained, or at least maybe a dark maroon. But he chose white, and that's because white means something. It also provided something else. I want you to think about the picture for a second. I'm not going to do this because I'll make a total mess in this sanctuary, and then somebody might be my blood the next thing we're looking for. But think about this uniform, and as he is out there and he is serving, and he begins to serve, as it's going to get stained. And on a white backdrop, those red splotches are going to become so very distinctive. And when he got home from work that night, his wife didn't have to ask him, honey, how was your day? She could just look at the outfit. Oh, it was one of those kind of days. Go take a shower. Dinner will be ready shortly. That's the way it works. So God made it white because it resembled purity. But it also provided a wonderful image about what's going to happen whenever you deal with sin. It got stained and it was demonstrated. Now, not only was it white, this was a very practical uniform for the priest. Okay, God didn't want them to have to struggle, so he gave them some pieces, and it's divided of four different pieces. And so let's talk about the first three pieces out there. The first thing they got was a cap, okay, a turban, as they called it. And this was an important piece of the uniform because these guys are going to be working out in the sun. How important is your hat if you're going to be out in the sun all day long? When I was a kid, didn't think much about it. Now that I'm an adult and I don't have as much hair up here as I used to, if I go out and I don't wear a cap, you know what I'm going to have, right? A very bad sunburn on top of my head. So caps were important because, A, they would keep the sun from giving them sunburns, or it would also help them with their sweat. Notice it was a turban style, so as they were sweating, so it was a very practical hat that they had. They also had a tunic. So this is the tunic. And we usually think about this wrong. This looked more like a dress or maybe a surgical gown as we think about it. It's not something they would button at the front. It is actually something they would step in and pull over top of them, and then it would tie in the back. They didn't have zippers back then, guys. So it would tie in the back. So what would happen is you would have a front piece here that would have no gaps on it. And that's important for us to remember because what are they going to be doing? Working a lot in blood. Okay, so God gave them something where it would not get on their skin. They were completely covered on the front. Then they had this thing that's called a sash. And whenever I think of the word sash, I think Miss America pageant, right? It's the thing that goes over here that says Miss whatever state you're from. That's not what the sash was. The sash was really more of a belt. Went right around the waist. And the practical application of that belt, if ladies probably know this better than men, when you wear a dress that kind of is really long, the belt, first of all, gives you a nicer figure. And that doesn't make it so frumpy. But it gives you more of a defined figure. But it does serve a practical purpose. And it gathers up the dress, the long garment, and it keeps you from having to step on it. So when God was designing this, he made it very practical for the job that they were doing. But here's the amazing thing. The outfit would have covered completely except for their hands, their face, and their feet. Why are their feet not covered? Last week's sermon title, no shoes allowed. okay? So everything would have been covered with their hands, their feet, and their face. And if you begin to think about it, those are the pieces of their body they would have needed to serve in the tabernacle. They had to have their face uncovered. It'd be nice to see where you're going, okay? And to see the people that you're ministering to. They had to have their hands uncovered because, well, they had to wash things and do things with their hands. And we talked last week about why their feet were uncovered, because of the fact that they were standing on holy ground. So this whole idea of this outfit that they put together was very practical, but it was also to the point that it was professional. Please note, these were they were personal. I can't read my own notes. They were personal. They made the outfit for each individual priest. Every priest got their own outfit. Okay, they didn't share. Isn't that nice to know? They didn't take it off when they left work and put it in the locker, and the next priest coming on duty just grabbed theirs and put it on. Ew, that sounds disgusting. Okay? This was not a one-size-fits-all kind of thing. And, you know, I think a lot of times we miss that, especially in our faith. A lot of times we want my faith to fit you and your faith to fit me, and we think it's a one-size-fits-all. You get it. This outfit that they were wearing, they each would have to be measured and fitted. So they would have to get, and they would have to take out the tape measure and decide how long. I don't know what they use for tape measures, but I think probably pieces of rope. But they would have to sit there, and they would have to get them all put together, and they would just had to be done over and over and measured and fitted. And every time a new priest came on board, this process had to be done. So now let's talk about that they were professional. Okay? Tell the skilled workers to whom I have given wisdom in such matters that they are to make garments for Aaron. So again, this is not a home-sewn costume. Okay? They didn't hire the priest and say, here are the schematics for what you have to wear to work. Go to the uniform shop and buy your own. Okay? They were sewn by professional. Did you see the word? Skill. They had words like weave and embroiderer. So these were not just something that they threw together at the last minute. God said, no, I have a purpose. I want you to measure them, and I want you to get the best of the best. I want you to get the skilled workers. I want you to get the ones that do this for a profession. People that do this for a living. And they're the ones that I want you to get to make this. And this is an important thing for us to remember, because a lot of times we have skills that we use in our job, and we never think about those skills as supposed to come over into the church also. Hey, if you're a professional grass cutter, we got grass. If you're a professional computer person, we've got computers. If you're a professional cleaner, guess what? We've got cleaning. There's all kinds of things that need to happen in the church. And God expected the skilled workers to put their skills that they were using back to service in the church. And a lot of times we overlook this. We think, yeah, we'll just contract somebody to do that. No, that's not the way it was supposed to work. So he had them do this. And just so you know, this wasn't a one-time event. And I don't think every priest, my personal opinion, every priest didn't just have one outfit. My sister used to work for Wendy's, okay, way back in the day when they had those white and blue smocks that I thought looked like circus tents, okay? And they would have these smocks. So her uniform was a pair of black pants and a white shirt and this smock that she would put over when she, they had her little name tag and all on it. She had three of those smocks, and trust me, she had more than one white shirt and more than one pair of black pants. Why? Because she worked at Wendy's. And when she came home, she smelled like Wendy's, okay? And she wasn't going to put that uniform back on the next day, and we certainly weren't going to wash it every single night. So I think they probably had multiple of these, that's my personal opinion, that the priests would have to put on to make themselves ready to go. So that meant a lot of work for these skilled professionals, because this is not a one-time event. They'd have to make these things, and when it got torn or stained beyond, they'd have to go back and mend them. And when they couldn't mend them anymore, they'd have to make them new ones. And every time a priest died and a new priest came on board, they'd have to send them to the tailor, and they'd have to measure them. So this was an ongoing ministry for these workers all during their life. Isn't that funny? Service wasn't just I do it once and I'm done. It became a lifestyle. I wonder if they ever got tired of making it. I expect they did. So not only was it professionally made, it was purposefully made. We have this idea of dignity and honor. So now I want to go back to my Jerry story that I started out with. When Jerry was in uniform, again, I noticed he sat straighter. He walked different. And I know why. You know why? Because I'm one of those annoying people. When I don't understand something, I ask a dumb question. And so I asked him. And he gave me the wonderful answer that I'd like to share with you. Putting on the uniform changes me because I am no longer Jerry Estes. In uniform, I am Jerry Estes, an officer in the U.S. Air Force. His uniform identified him, but at the same time, it gave him a responsibility to live up to. When he put that uniform on, he realized as he walked down the street, everybody else was going to see the uniform, and whatever he did, they were going to associate that with the U.S. Air Force. You know, if he's out and he's like painting on the side of buildings and painting graffiti, they're going to see that's not Jerry doing that. Who did that? The U.S. Air Force. You know, if he runs a red light and somebody saw him, then you know what? It wasn't Jerry that ran the red light. Who ran the red light? The U.S. Air Force. And this is important for us as Christians to remember because his uniform identified him and it gave him a responsibility to live up to. But you know what? We have the same thing when it comes to Jesus. Ephesians chapter 4, verses 23, 24, this is what it reads. That, however, is not the way of life you learned when you heard about Christ and were taught in him in accordance with the truth that is in Jesus. You were taught with regard to your former way of life to put off your old self, which is being corrupted by its deceitful desires, to be made in the new attitude of your mind, and put on the new self created to be like God in truth. True righteousness and holiness. Here's what I want you to take out of this, folks. When you wear the name of Jesus, understand you're putting him on. Okay? When you say, I am a Christian, we used to sing that little song, I am a C, I am a CH. I'm not going to sing, trust me, but we would sing the song. When you put that on, you're putting on the name of Christ. And when you call yourself a Christian, that title, well, whether you like it or not, it comes with duties, it comes with responsibilities, it comes with obligations, and guess what? It even comes with a few orders that are not optional. And again, I think we overlook this idea. We think, well, I come forward and I become a Christian and I call myself a Christian and I leave and I can do anything that I want because I'm a Christian, right? It's all covered under Jesus. Not the way it works, folks. Imagine if the military took that thing. Well, you join the military and we'll give you the uniform and then, you know, you'll go through basic training so we can teach you about the military. And then when you leave, don't worry about the platoon. Don't worry about the group. You just go live life the way you want it to work. How do you think that worked out in the war? Not very well. There has to be a plan, and that plan has to come with, again, duties, responsibilities, obligations. And sometimes we don't like this. There are even some orders that you do whether you like it or not. That's just the way it works. And here's what I recommend for you. Don't take wearing it lightly. I think we do. We think it's just something that we take on and put off every time we come to church and we don't understand. This is called an everyday outfit. Your faith is an everyday outfit that you're supposed to live. You don't take it on and off as you come in and out of this building. And you should not take wearing it very lightly. Remember, I told you about Jerry's walk, his 10 to 2 becoming a stride. When you put on that name of Jesus, you make sure you watch your walk. Colossians chapter 1, verse 10. So that you may live a life worthy of the Lord and please him in every way, bearing fruit in every good work, growing in the knowledge of God. That's what we're supposed to do. That's how this is supposed to work. My walk is supposed to resemble the man that I said I put on, the title that I'm wearing. The funny thing is did you know there was a dressing ceremony for this? Verse 41 tells us, after you put these clothes on your brother and his sons, anoint and ordain them and consecrate them so they may serve as priests. Did you know the U.S. Air Force has a 28-page manual on how to get dressed to serve? 28 pages. Does that not seem like overkill for something I've been doing since I'm six?
I know how to put on a shirt. I know how to put on pants. I know how to lace up shoes. I know how to put on. They have meticulous instructions on how this was supposed to be done. And you know what? So it came when God said put on the priestly uniform. You see, we're told that putting on these clothes, this everyday outfit that we see here, putting them on is just not about getting dressed. Now, we had a little snippet here about them dressing. If you would really be interested in seeing how the priests were to get dressed, go to Leviticus chapter 8 and chapter 9, and you can just read two chapters because that dressing ceremony went on for two chapters. Okay, I'm not reading that to you. Aren't you happy? But the entire point of this dressing ceremony is the uniform was to designate people for service. Isn't that what the priest was doing? The priest wasn't getting dressed so that he could go to the tabernacle and pull out a chair and sit down and bark out instructions on how people were supposed to live their life, was he? The priest wasn't getting dressed to go somewhere and have a party. He wasn't getting dressed to go and do other. He was getting dressed because, hey, he is going to serve. Guess what? When you put on Christ, yeah, you're putting on the idea of service. Matthew chapter 20, verses 25 through 28. Jesus called them being his disciples, together and said, "You know the rulers of the Gentiles lord over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many." Again, I think it's something that we're missing in the church. And I think COVID kind of even leveled this a little bit more. We don't come here to be served. We should be coming here to serve. We should be coming here with the mentality that there are people out there that need to know who Jesus is. And we are coming here to serve them. But oftentimes we come here and, well, we just want to be served. Serve me. Sing to me. Tell me a good story. But here's what you need to remember. The moment, this is not something you have to learn, okay? The moment you put on Christ, you're putting on the idea of servanthood. As a matter of fact, Jesus takes it a step further. He says, you're taking on the role of a slave. That means you're owned by your master. And folks, that's hard. Because I don't want anybody owning me. I want to do things my way. But no, if you take on that uniform, you're signing up. Again, we can go back to our military experience. You sign on the dotted line to go serve. You don't get to pick where you go, do you? They kind of say, this is the job. Hop on the plane and we're going to land. We'll get you there, but you're going to go where we tell you to go. You're going to dress how we tell you to dress. You're going to eat when we tell you to eat. You're going to sleep when we tell you to sleep. And by the way, you're going to have to do all the other things to go with it, because that is the nature of serving. Here's a fact that we have forgotten as a church, that this priestly garment reminds us. When you come into this idea of a relationship with Christ, you are entitled to nothing more than the privilege of serving in his presence. "You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly in love." Still want to sign up to be a Christian? You realize service comes with it. It's expected of you. It's what you're designed to do. Just like when you put on the military uniform, you are dressing yourself for service in the military. Why do we call, what do we say it? We do this every Veterans Day, right? We thank them for their service. Yeah, that's what it's about. So I got one more piece of the uniform I left out. Did you catch it? I gave you three parts. I gave you a hat. I gave you a dress, tunic, whatever you want to call it. I gave you a belt. But there were four pieces of that uniform mentioned. And that brings me to a very interesting question. Does God really care about my underwear? This is what it says in verses 42 and 43. Make linen undergarments and as a covering for the body, reaching from the waist to the thigh. Aaron and his sons must wear them whenever they enter the tent of meetings or approach the altar to minister in the holy place, so that they will not incur guilt and die. So I know in your bulletins it says the everyday dress. The actual work and sermon title of this particular sermon is, Does God Really Care About My Underwear? And at least as we read verses 42 through 43, we can answer one age-old question. God is definitely a boxer person, not a brief person. Okay, all you got to do is look at the schematics. It goes from your waist to about your thigh, and that is not briefs, okay? God was a boxer person when it came to designing these. But seriously, it's a good question. Does it matter? I mean, think about it. Think about it rationally. These guys were going to be covered from head to ankle, not toe, because no shoes allowed. So they're going to be covered from head to ankle. Who's going to see them? What does it matter? What does it matter what the underwear looks like? Because they're wearing this, and this is what I see. And that's the important part that you need to start wrapping into your mind. You see, for the most part, the duties of the priest would the priest would shed their tunic upon entering the holy place. That's not an image I really want, and this doesn't come off, by the way. This base, I couldn't do it. I couldn't put somebody up here in their underwear. I just couldn't do it. So this doesn't come off, but when they entered the holy place, remember from our tabernacle series last year, that's the place where, not the Holy of Holies, it's the bigger space where the other piece, where the pieces set with the altar and the showbread and the lampstand. And so when they would come in that, when they came to that curtain, the first thing they would have to do was reach around here and untie this and let their apron drop to their smock drop to the ground. Their tunic was gone. They'd take their cap and pull it off and put it right here. They had to undo that belt before they took it. But they got all the way down to their underwear. So when they came into service, what they were serving in was just their underwear and not new dress code for the minister around here. Okay, not happening. Okay, you don't want it, and I'm not doing it. So there you go. But we need to remember that this idea of serving, it was there. Underwear that they came to God's presence. Wow. I don't know if I come to church that way. Unlike the full uniform, the only thing covered was their private parts. Everything else was there for God to see. And there is a really good object lesson for this, folks. This goes back to serving God means you have to be real and you have to be vulnerable. If you're interested in just keeping your life all covered up and you think you've got God fooled and you think you can come into this service relationship and you can throw God a little here and a little there, God said, You come into my presence, you want to sign up to serve me, folks, we're going to get very intimate with this thing. As a matter of fact, you're going to shed it. And you're going to let me see you for who you really are. The other thing it does is it shows that God is just concerned, is just as concerned about what's on the inside as what we see. Even when they were out and they were in the main area and they had on their full uniform and they were going back and forth, God knew what was underneath that tunic, right? He knew what it looked like. Now, this doesn't surprise us when we hear this because guess what? We already know. We quote this verse all the time. No surprise. Man looks on the outside. God's looking at your heart. Jesus didn't lose this idea. Remember when Jesus came and he confronted the Pharisees about the way they were living their life, their religious life? You know what he told them, right? He said, hey, you're like the dirty cup, clean on the outside, but dirty on the inside. Then he thumped them a little bit harder. He said, hey, guys, you're like whitewashed tombs, pretty and painted on the outside. But what's inside of a tomb? Death. And this picture that God gives, he's so specific that he goes all the way down. Does God really care about my underwear? Okay, not my physical one. He doesn't care boxers or briefs for me. Okay, I have no, remember, nothing's holy left. Okay, we talked about that last week. He doesn't care about my physical underwear, but he absolutely does care about what's on the inside of me. What does it look like when I come into God's presence? Am I coming in with a lot of pretenses, something that I've put together, that I sewed together to cover up this, that, and the other? After all, I don't look so good in that outfit because maybe I'm a little big in the middle, or I got short hips or short legs. God said, no, I don't care about any of that. I care about you. I care about this idea, once we're alone, what do you look like? This morning you got up, and I'm going to guess what you're wearing right now is not what you wore to bed last night. Just call it a good guess, okay? And I'm going to guess at some point, for I'm going to say 99% of people sitting here this morning or in the sound of my voice, at some point you looked in the mirror. And maybe you decided you didn't like what you saw in the mirror because it looked, I don't know, for me it looks old now, but different things. And so you went about your business trying your best to cover it up, make it look better, and get yourself ready to come to church. Thank you for being here, but I got a question for you. What about tomorrow morning? That's Monday, by the way. We have jobs and school and other things to do. When you get up tomorrow and you look in the mirror, are you going to get yourself ready for God that day? I don't know. Monday's a bad day for me, God. Okay, what about Tuesday? What you going to do on that day? I don't know, God. I got a ton of meetings on Tuesday. That's not a good day. What about Wednesday? Well, Wednesday, there's not Bible study at night, so maybe I'll get ready for that. But I don't know. Thursday? Well, if you're in the worship team, you'll be here at some point during the day, so maybe you have to get your voice ready or something for that. Friday? I don't know, God. Getting close to the weekend. Saturday? Are you kidding? It's supposed to be 65 degrees next weekend. The only thing I'm getting ready for is my shorts and my t-shirt. Me and my bike are going for a trip. Okay, but you get the point, right? We treat God like we only get dressed once a week for Him. And this is the everyday uniform for the priest. They put one of these on every single day except for the Sabbath. Okay, they got Saturday off, and they had to stay home and do nothing. What a life. But this is the picture that God painted for His church. So here's my question for you. Are you living your Christian life one day a week, or are you dressed for success in God's presence, and you start with the everyday uniform?